Spoken word.
A taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance. Good morning and welcome to the 3CR Spoken Word Program. My name is Di Cousins and today I'm talking to Peter Friedlander, who is the translator of a book called Pearls of Light, Sufi Sant Songs by Yari Sahib. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you very much, Di. It's a pleasure to be here.
Congratulations on the new book. I'm just wondering, how did you find the poet Yari Sahib? How did you discover this person?
Ah, well, that's a very interesting question, because the answer is that my co-translator and author, Harry Aveling, had already been working in a way on the verses of Yari Sahib, because in an earlier phase in his life, he'd been a follower of Osho Rajneesh, and Osho Rajneesh had made a commentary on the poems, on verses of Yari Sahib. And so Harry suggested that whereas what Rajneesh had done was to basically sort of say, well, Yari Sahib said something and then describe what he wanted to say, we can actually look at the verses for ourselves. And so these translations arose out of a mutual interest in the verses of Sufis and Hindu Sants, and this was shared between myself and Harry Aveling.
Well done. And tell me a little bit about his history. When did Yari Sahib live and where did he live?
Well, Yari Sahib, you could basically say, lived in the 17th, 18th century. We're talking about a range of dates which are given, but they often are something like 1668 to 1780 or something like that. The dates are very rough because most people in the end agree that nobody knows exactly when he was born. It's around the time of the reign of the Emperor Aurangzeb in India. And interestingly enough, it's also about the time in London of the Great Fire of 1666 that he might have been born, and the time of the restitution of the monarchy in 1688 as well. So it's a kind of critical era in both countries. It's a time of transition and of restoration.
And as I understand it, his poetry was transmitted to his followers in the form of songs, which were sung collectively in community gatherings and memorized and perpetuated as an oral tradition. And it wasn't until some time after his life that they were actually written down in various forms of Hindi.
Well, that's quite possibly the case. But what we do know is, based upon 19th century accounts of the life of Yari, which were told to British administrators in an area called Burakura, a village, where there was a monastery of the Gulal Panth, a group of Hindus who follow a tradition which they traced back to a founder guru who was a woman called Bauri, the crazy woman, and one of her disciples was Yari Sahib, about the third leader of this movement. And according to that tradition, they were based in Delhi, these people, and they regularly met together at a kind of Sufi gathering, quite possibly on a Thursday night, is a common day of the week when Sufis gather together and sing in Delhi, I've been told. And we don't know when the songs were first written down, but it's said that Yari Sahib himself was an educated man, and the people who were coming from Eastern UP, which is where the town or village rather of Burakura is situated, were also to some extent educated people. So it's quite possible that versions of the verses were written down about the time when they were composed. They might have originally been written in Urdu script, as well as in some forms of Eastern Hindi script. But the extra thing is, they might well have been sung constantly. I met some people a while ago who were saying that they went to a similar Sufi gathering in Delhi, the shrine of Hazrat Nizamuddin, and the tradition there was that they had sung the same songs of Amir Khusro every Thursday night since about the year 1200.
Wow. It's hard to imagine, isn't it, the constancy of the oral traditions, but it's also quite plausible. So, but looking at Yari Sahib, he's identified as a Sufi, but also in a ecumenical relationship with Hindu followers who don't find any contradiction in his position, being a Muslim Sufi and them being Hindu followers. So there's some kind of universality in his teachings. Can you explain also something about the universality, but also something about what it is, what the idea of a Sufi is? Because some people may not have heard that term.
Sufi is a term that's used to refer to what are normally identified as Muslim mystical followers of the tradition of Islam. And the ideas are much focused on the notion that rather than scriptural study, what matters is personal experience. And what happens often is that Sufi traditions are transmitted and generated within lineages in which people regularly gather together to sing songs of the founders of the traditions and then add their own songs to them and practice forms of spirituality, we could call it, in which there's often an emphasis on the recitation of the name of God, which in Urdu and Arabic is called zikr. And there's also, in these verses, a strong sense that the divine is revealed within us through light and the experience of the perception of light within our own mind and body. So that's not universal in Sufism, but in this case, in this particular tradition, it seems to have been a strong emphasis and comes out strongly in Yari Sahib's works.
So it sort of points to an idea of spiritual practice as an internal discipline, which involves, as you say, the recitation of mantra, but perhaps the visualization of light or the experience of light, and that there was enough common ground in these kinds of practices and experiences that his Hindu companions felt there was no contradiction in what he was teaching and what he was following.
It seems, in fact, that from some of the songs you can say that at times Yari Sahib and his followers were identifying themselves as being neither Hindus nor Muslims. And there's a fantastic song in this collection which I think might be good to put in at this moment.
Okay, let's read that.
So this is the fifth song in the collection, and it starts, Allah is the One. He is the lover we love. The Lord Muhammad Saab is the light that shines in each and every body. He is creation's whole expanse. His light illuminates the seven hells and the seven heavens. His flame shines in the flickering stars. Incomparable, formless, alone, separate from both Hindus and Turks. I myself saw that dervish, the true Muslim, is the essence, never coming, never going, never living, never dying. Yari's friend is our friend.
Right. Yeah, so it's pointing to a universal human experience rather than a particular doctrinal experience or position.
And the sort of emotionality of it is also expressed in the very name of the person who is composer of this work, Yari, which means the lover, the one who loves somebody or other. And in this case, obviously, Yari loves God. That's his central focus.
Yeah, and I think that this mystical perspective points to not a God that requires somebody to believe in him, but some kind of, as you're pointing out, inner experience.
And the inner experience which is mentioned is here in that song is the light that shines in each and everybody's body. And in fact, in Urdu, the verses can also be thought, said or spoken of as being in Urdu as well in Hindi. It's the Nur-e-Muhammad, the light of Muhammad, which shines within all. And it's that experience which is central to the teachings of Yari Sahib.
Right, great. And just going back a little bit, in order to present the work, how you had to look at a couple of different manuscripts and then make a critical edition. Would you like to just explain something about that?
Yes. So one of the great problems or the great opportunities which presents itself for people like myself who I'd want to investigate poetry like this is that sometimes manuscripts are hard to find. And also the first famous print edition of these works of Yari came out in about 1911, and the author of that print edition said that he himself had a great difficulty in finding the verses of Yari, and after much searching he managed to find a manuscript in which there was a good collection of the verses, it seemed to him, and then he edited those and published them under the name of the Ratanavali, the Garland of Gems of Yari Sahib. But I then found, as we were working on this, that in 1933, the followers of the Gulal Pant, the tradition who were the holders of the memory of Yari Sahib, published an edition of their holy book, which is called the Ram Jahaz, the Ship of Ram, and in which they include the verses of Yari. But they're not quite the same as the verses of Yari in the manuscript which the earlier editor had spotted. And then, in addition, I found there was a third source, which was, as well as the big monastery in Burakura, there was a smaller monastery in somewhere called Chitbara Gaon. And some of those verses were preserved in a manuscript which was in the Nagari Pracharani Sabha in Varanasi. I couldn't actually get to see that manuscript because it's currently difficult to find, apparently, but there are the transcriptions from the manuscript directly, which were published back in 1941, I think it was. So I was able to compare these three versions of the songs, along with a book which was published in the early 20th century by a couple of enthusiasts for Hindi poetry who recorded things based on the songs that they heard being recited in the streets. And these two people published four of the verses in the versions which were then orally transmitted in the area of Burakura. So I took all these different versions and tried to figure out from them what was probably the original form of the songs, and also what the ways in which they varied showed us about how some people had heard the songs and heard them as being Sufi teachings directly. Some people had heard them and heard them as being forms of Hindu teachings, and some people had heard them and perhaps at times not been quite sure what exactly was being said in them. So all the different manuscripts helped us, like a kaleidoscope, to be able to imagine what the verses might originally have been like. And that's the version which I present here.
Yeah, well done. So a critical edition.
Mm.
Yeah, that's excellent. So let's read another poem. What would you like to read?
Well, I'd love us to have a look at this one, which is poem 38 in the collection, which is called I See My Beloved. And this one starts like this. I see my beloved beyond the noose of death, beyond the world of symbolic forms, Malkut, the heavenly power of created souls, Jabarut, the sublime state of Allah, Lahut, ready to manifest itself beyond the triple void that lies beyond Lahut. I bathe in the essence of love, in the realm of pre-existent unity, Hahut. I am smoke rising up, a swan pecking on pure pearls of light. Yari! I sit, drunken, 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 seeing strings of pearls weaving before my eyes.
And this term, Pearls of Light, is the name of the book.
That's right. That's where I picked the term of art. And it's a very interesting word as well, in fact, in the Urdu Hindi based for this, because the word is mutlak. Mutlak moti ka noor chuno. So mutlak is a term within Islamic tradition, which means something which is untouched and interfered with in any way by human hand. So, for instance, water as it falls from the sky is mutlak pani. And water, perhaps, as when it arrives on the mountain, is mutlak. But by the time it arrives in your taps, in your house, it certainly isn't mutlak any longer. So it's a particular notion of purity, the purity which resides in something being utterly unsullied by any form of intervention from the normal, mundane world around you.
And where does the mutlak arise? Which line is that?
This is in the third line of the verse, in the second half of it. We can read mutlak moti ka noor, the light of pure pearls. So I've translated it as pure pearls of light.
Right, right. So pure as in untouched.
And also another thing which is a good thing about this verse is the way that it points to the fact that there's no questioning the degree to which Yari Sahib was both a Sufi and also somebody who was much beloved of many people from Hindu communities. Because we have all these mentions of the different levels of reality, which were also mentioned in the previous poem we mentioned, Allah is my one beloved. But in this case, they're specifically explained to be the worlds of symbolic forms, Malkut, the world of heavenly souls, Jabrut, the sublime state of Lahut, and even beyond that, a third estate, which is sort of beyond the beyond of Lahut. And then it seems that Yari wants to go still further and have a state of Hahut, the realm of pre-existent unity. So what people say is that since the early 20th century, people have looked at this and said, is he using these terms, which are terms from Islamic cosmology, to also relate to the notions of there being different levels of experience within the body? And for those of you who are interested in yogic traditions, you might know that yogic traditions often visualize the body as having chakras within it, different centers. And so many Hindus listening to this verse interpreted these Islamic terms as being representative of Hindu notions about the inner cosmology of the body. And that's also backed up by the way that he then says, I am smoke rising up, a swan pecking on pure pearls of light. So this notion of rising up within the body, that the prana, the spirit, if you make it change its behavior, which is normally to sort of come into the body and then sort of dissipate through all the senses, instead you make that pure essence of the body rise up within you to the crown of the head, then in this case, he feels that what he can become is like swans, hansa. And we can peck on the pure pearls of light as they drip constantly down into us from the divine.
So it's really talking about Kundalini yoga.
Mm-hmm. That's what many people said when they heard it.
Yeah.
They said, oh, this man's singing a Sufi song to us.
Yes.
But at the same time, he's singing about Kundalini yoga.
Yes, which is a Hindu tradition.
Mm.
Yeah. So when we talk about how these songs were preserved by the community, and, you know, sung down the generations and then fixed in different manuscripts, which, you know, could be written down by different people, even someone writing down somebody singing in the street. Who are the people around him who succeed him in subsequent generations? What sort of community was that?
So it seems to be that the origin stories within this tradition, which is sometimes nowadays called the Gulal Pant, because there was a man called Gulal who was one of the lineage holders, who was particularly famous. And Pant means something like a pathway. So it's a tradition that follows, a community that follows a particular pathway to the divine. And they were particularly strong and active in this area to the north of Varanasi, in Burakura and its surroundings. And The story of the origin of this kind of tradition is that once upon a time, a member of that tradition, who was a poor farmer, got into trouble about land taxes and had to go to Delhi to have a court case held. And while he was in Delhi, he thought it would be a good idea to go to some sort of a religious gathering to try and get some sort of benefit from that before he had his court case. And when he went to the satsang, or the mehfil, of Yari Sahib, and took part in it, Yari Sahib reassured him that he would, in fact, be freed after his court case. And that's exactly what happened. And so this man, who became known as Bulla within the tradition, came back to Yari and said, "This is really good. I have been acquitted." And then Yari Sahib said, "I will initiate you into the tradition. I will give you a cotton thread to wear around your body, and I will give you a mantra to which you should chant, which is variously written as Soham, I am that, or in some cases it's said to have just been Ram, Ram. And also, having taken this initiation into the tradition, you should practice non-violence and not harm any living being." And this follower of Yari Sahib then went back to Burakura near Varanasi and became a popular teacher. And around him, many low-caste community members gathered, people like himself from the less forward positions in society. And it seems over time that as different teachers arose within that tradition, it became a tradition, a community, which was associated with these ideas of non-violence and of religious tolerance. And when the British were investigating what the situation was that they encountered around the area, they said they were quite puzzled, because what they noticed was that Hindus and Muslims got on very well in this area, and that Hindus participated in Muslim festivals along with the Muslims. So we can see there was this kind of incredible mix going on. But some people were probably more Hindu, some people were probably a bit more, perhaps you wouldn't say secular, but a bit more sort of aligned in their tradition. And some people probably continue to be largely strongly influenced by Sufi tradition. And because of the importance of Yari Sahib, his verses were preserved along with those of the other earlier teachers of the tradition.
Yes, well, it's a wonderful thing how a religious lineage can be transmitted even in this earlier time when printing presses and so on were much harder to obtain, and also most people were not reading, they were mostly illiterate, but somehow they were able to transmit these traditions and give us this heritage of wonderful poetry. So let's read another poem.
Indeed. And this next poem I'm going to suggest that we try and read is to do with the idea of an acrobat, because we've noticed that there's description of how Yari says his spirit rose up within his body. And in verse 12 in this collection, "My heart always plays the acrobat's game," we have a longer description in a sense of the kind of practice which he advocated. And he describes it in this way: "My heart always plays the acrobat's game. My mind forever dwells at his lotus feet. No hands beat, but the drums resound. A conqueror climbing the unclimbable path. I sing without a head, without form, without feet, I make my move. Mount Sumeru becomes the pole. Mindfulness becomes the rope. Consciousness and thought play together. I saw the show put on by the 25 tendencies. I turned around, climbed into space and played. Yari, this is the way the acrobat plays, beating the drum of the silent sound. Infinite artistry, difficult ascents, formless. They know how to be tellers of the tale."
And it reminds me a little bit of Zen koans, the most famous, of course, being "What is the sound of one hand clapping?" But, you know, beating the drum of the silent sound, pointing to something that's inexpressible, I think.
Indeed. And one of the key features of this practice is something which is called ajapajap, the chantless chant. So the idea is that you will at one point become so able to repeat in zikr, the repetition of the name of the divine, that you no longer actually physically say anything. You chant without chanting. And the sound which is the focus of attention is a soundless sound. And I think the importance of this as well struck me at one point, because long ago, in about 1978, I was living in a village in India at one point. And one day, a group of traveling acrobats came to the village. And they set up just outside the house of the man I was staying with. And there was a man playing a drum, and a man who chanted and sang, and a young girl or woman who shimmied up a bamboo pole which they held vertically outside the house and danced on top of the pole. And then afterwards I said, "That's amazing," to the people I was staying with. "How is it possible that that woman was able to dance just on the top of a bamboo pole?" And they said, "Oh, that was only because of the chanting that was taking place that you could see that happening. It wasn't the skill of the acrobat. It was the chant that made everything possible." And so I think the idea of the physical correlate to this practice here is that in the physical world, we can see people like acrobats having this incredible skill. And acrobats are normally, in this case, by the way, people of low castes. But in the spiritual world, we can have a similar prana practice in which we're able to do something apparently impossible and rise up within our own mental mind and body condition. Mount Sumeru, by the way, is the sort of peak mountain in Hindu cosmology. So the Mount Sumeru, the highest peak of the universe, becomes the pole on which the acrobat dance, and mindfulness the rope. And so mindfulness is something which followers of Buddhist traditions often talk about these days as well, the ability to maintain focused awareness on whatever happens within the realm of consciousness. So we can see a kind of picture of how Yari Sahib was using an analogy based on the lived experience of people at the time, that they would see actual acrobats coming and performing like this in their villages and towns. But he was saying to them, "Yes, but you can do this all the time within your body. That's why my heart always plays the acrobat's game."
Right, and it's all referring to a special kind of inner experience.
And the aim of the inner experience is to be fully in the presence of the divine. So it's not based upon a kind of precept that you must believe in certain things. It's constantly hinting at a practice which, if you take it on, will allow you for yourself, individually and collectively, no doubt, if you're gathering with other people, to have this direct experience of the divine.
Well, unfortunately, we have to stop right there. I've been talking to Peter Friedlander about his new book, Pearls of Light, Sufi Sant Songs by Yari Sahib, which is available from an Indian publisher, Manohar, and which is spelled Manohar. Peter is an honorary associate professor at the ANU, and you lectured in Hindi and South Asian studies for about 30 years, which is amazing. It's really great to have you on the program, Peter.
Thank you so much, Di. It's been a real pleasure to be here and share with you and all the listeners the pearls of light which have come from translating Yari's songs into English.
Congratulations on your work. So my name is Di Cousins, and this has been the 3CR Spoken Word Program.